This is the August 8th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He's from Windsor, Illinois. Naomi Bloom is here from Total Farm Marketing. That's TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. And Arlen Suderman joins us from Kansas City, Missouri, and StoneX. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like. Let's begin with a set of questions that we might want to ask during the program. We'll get those from our panelists. Naomi Bloom, we'll start with you. What things would you like to talk about today?
Well, I want to make producers are just ready for Monday's USDA WASDE report. There could be a lot of twists and turns on it between various supply and demand fundamentals. So I think between the three of us, we can really get everybody ready for potentially what might occur so they can make their best marketing plans ahead of it.
Arlen Suderman of StoneX.
Yeah, related to that, Scott Irwin had a post regarding our StoneX customer survey yield and how things might be higher than that. And I think that's a worthy discussion. Just if we continue to see mild weather this month, how high might these yields go? What is the potential? What do we need to be braced for that possibility? And also maybe if we get the chance to talk about what's happening in the outside markets and how that interacts, what's behind that, and how that might impact commodities going forward.
And finally, Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's been a rough go here lately. We all know that the last several months we've trended lower. But at this stage of the game, you know, a person has to ask themselves, which direction might you go if this report comes in the way most of us feel, which is that the USDA would raise yield. So I guess we're kind of hoping for, you know, maybe a little bit of an acreage adjustment or something in there. But at the same time, we're respecting the fact that prices could certainly continue to move lower if we look at, you know, what kind of production we could be looking at on top of the carry-ins that we'll end up with going into this new marketing year.
So let's start, Arlen, with Twitter post or X post that Scott had made about the StoneX numbers. Can you go through the set of numbers that you released this week as it's related to yield per corn?
Yeah, absolutely. We released our customer survey data, which showed a national average corn yield of 182.3 bushels per acre. It put Illinois at 210 bushels per acre, which is not a record. Soybean crop nationally at 52.6, and in Illinois at 65 bushels per acre. And what Scott had said was, as I've looked at the fields around the state and heard some of the anecdotal reports, 210 sounds a little bit on the lean side, like it may be, the yield may be higher. So I didn't look at Illinois specifically because he did a good job of analyzing that, looking at other similar years with good favorable growing conditions. But I did look back and say, okay, if this period of grain fill continues to be favorable and the weather's turning out to be much more mild than what we first thought when we started the month of August, and if that continues, what can we anticipate the possibility of? So I looked back at the 6 years out of the last 30 that all had better than a 5% gain above trend and looked at the weather for them, and they all had generally a mild Midwest during that month, or the composite was mild, 1 to 2 degrees Fahrenheit below average, and generally a half to 1.5 inches above normal for rainfall. And I looked at what percent above trend they were and then took the average of those of that percentage and multiplied it times this year's 181 bushel yield. And I came up with a yield of 194.7 bushels per acre. Now, I'm not forecasting 194 bushel national average yield right now, but what that does show us is if August is favorable for grain fill, in other words, we slow down the maturation process and get a deeper kernel, larger kernel size, fewer kernels per bushel, there is potential for this yield to go quite a bit higher from where we're at right now. And I think if the forecast holds this way, we have to anticipate that we're more at risk of seeing higher yields than we are of lower yields.
Out of curiosity, the six for what? I can come up with three, 94, 04, and 14. What are the other three?
Correct. 2009, 2016, and 2017.
Oh, so very recent. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, what do you think of those numbers?
Yeah, I think that ultimately everything Arlen's saying I can concur with. If you would end up with a really conducive grain fill period, considering what we've had so far, looking at, again, what's the drought monitor look like? It's devoid of color this year. You look at it the same time last year, we had a fair amount of yellow, red, brown, you name it. This is a different year. If you're ever going to build the model for an above trend line year, based upon not only, you know, the drought monitor, but conditions. I'm not a huge conditions person and trying to true those up with yields, but it's certainly a really good indicator of what kind of stress we're under or not under. I'll tell you what, this would be that year. And so, you know, I think it's pretty hard to get a handle on just how big the crop might be. We got to understand this August report is not anything out in the field. I mean, it comes down to surveys. It comes down to thermal imaging. I know most of your thermal imaging maps are going to look extremely good unless you've had a fair amount of early season stress, way too much water type situation, because we had just an incredible July. And so I'll tell you, Todd, I think that most of these signs point towards above 181. We came in, a little bit above what Arlen and Sonex's group was. We were at a 183.2, and I felt there's a variety of reasons we came up with that number. But by all means, we felt pretty confident after talking to our growers, you know, that we're going to have something that's above 181 and probably more than just maybe a bushel or so. soybeans is pretty tough to guess at right now because we don't know how we're going to finish. But I'll tell you, even if we didn't get much more rain, a lot of the Corn Belt is sitting with, the gauge still fairly full, so to speak, because there was so much July rainfall. So we feel like beans should move higher as well. It's just pretty tough to argue against that, I think, given everything that we've experienced this year.
And Naomi Bloom, your thoughts?
Well, if these numbers do come to fruition, I think producers just need to take that and have a defensive mindset with marketing. So just remember, the last time we had 2 billion bushel carryout for 2 years in a row, that was when we were in what I like to call the pit of despair for prices, when we were between 2014 and 2020. And prices during those years really nestled in the $3.50 to $4 area. And every once in a while, they could creep higher to $4.50. But the reality is that if these yields do come true, and if there's no changes to demand and not any big significant changes to the harvested acres, you're going to have big ending stocks yet one more year. And so producers who are frustrated with the notion of marketing $4 corn for December corn futures right now, just think of what it might mean if things work lower towards $3.50. So I feel heading into the report, to have a defensive mindset is good. Really consider potentially more cash sales, or take a look at some of those December corn $4 puts or something lower to lock in the value that might be there. And thinking back, of course, to 2014, that was the year where the market continued to trend lower into late September and early October before it finally found the harvest low. And also on these August USDA reports, in the years where there is big carryout for corn and beans both, oftentimes the August report doesn't give us anything fresh for friendly news. It might be neutral news or a little bit negative of news, and prices have a tendency to continue to drift lower into the harvest low. 2020 was the exception, but I think that had more to do with the derecho storm and then China agreeing to do the phase one deal. But usually the August report, again, in years where there's larger carryout, we don't get a lot of friendly news out of it. So it would take a monumental surprise from the USDA on Monday to get markets to march higher from where we are right now.
Arlen, StoneX clearly did numbers for soybeans. Can you run through those as well?
Yeah, on soybeans, we're at 52.6 above USDA at 50, and state of Illinois was at 65 bushels per acre. Overall, just reflecting the fact that the crop's looking good pretty much everywhere, Iowa coming in at 63 bushels per acre.
How hard is it for you to come up with a number for soybean? Corn always seems to be much easier to task than soybean, particularly at this time of the year.
Oh, absolutely. I think you take an August 1 soybean yield estimate with a grain of salt, but everyone wants to have a feel, wants to know. And so as we ask our customers, that's generally the conversation we have. Just it's a reflection of the beauty rating of it, the beauty contest, so to speak, just like subjective crop ratings. If you take a look at, does it look good? Oh, yeah, it looks good. Okay, what kind of yield? Well, probably better than last year or something like that, and kind of come up with the yield. So I'd have less confidence in the soybean yield on August 1 than corn, and I'd have more confidence in the September 1 estimate for both of them than on August 1.
On Monday, when these come out at 11 o'clock, there'll be the crop production report, as well as the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. USDA NASS at that time may update its acreage figures as well. And while we're talking, I had managed to get hold of Lance Honig from USDA NASS to see what he has to say about the release that they put out earlier, reminding folks that there would or could be an update. I asked him to give me a quick sentence as to why that was done, and he simply wrote back, "It is the same process we've been using for years, just earlier as FSA reporting processing improvements have made the data more complete sooner." So he's suggesting there's nothing more here to read into that than simply the FSA numbers are coming in faster and they're able to make adjustments in August rather than in October. That's something that they've told us in the past, and I know some of the trade has been thinking that there's more to this potentially, but it does tell us that there could be an acreage change. So the answer to that question is, or the question to that answer is really, will there be an acreage change? And Naomi, have you thought very much about what could change?
Yeah, my thought would be that we would see harvested acres decrease just because of the prevent plant that is likely to have occurred in Minnesota, parts of South Dakota, and portions of Northwest Iowa. I'm curious, though, where the numbers ultimately come in at, because I was surprised to hear after the fact that even into mid-June, there were producers in those regions who were still planting soybeans or doing a replant on corn one more time. So I'm thinking the numbers for harvested acres will be a little smaller to reflect that, but I don't know that it might be just a major, major reduction. I would be curious to see, without a doubt, you know, if they could do the breakdown of each state and then get a better feel for it, because it might be end up being that it's a basis play where certain pockets of the country will be a little bit more deficit than others, and so we might see stronger basis levels. But ultimately, you know, if that yield number turns out to be substantially higher, it'll offset a lower harvested acre number pretty easily.
Arlen, when you think about those numbers, what are you considering?
One of the things I'm looking at is what we lost to the floods back in June in that region of the northwestern Midwest. If you look at some of the NDVI maps that the government has, zero in on them, you can see some substantial areas that were impacted by the floods. So it raises a lot of questions. Then you look at also the hail damage, some of the big hailstorms they had in Nebraska. But specifically with the flood damage, we were able to get a hold of a report that NASS did using satellites to break down just what the losses were directly from the flooding. It doesn't reflect ponding because they only looked at anything that was more than 50 acres. And they came up with an estimate that there were 70,000 acres of corn and 46,000 acres of soybeans lost due to flooding. And I think most people will find that those numbers are much smaller than what they might have anticipated. Typically, flood damage is much less than what's anticipated, but that was even much less than what I anticipated as well. So whether you agree with them or don't agree with them, I would anticipate that harvested acreage in that region will go down by that amount anyway to reflect that flood loss, but that still won't account for the areas that we lost due to ponding, et cetera.
Am I right in thinking that the combined acreage was thought to be as much as 500,000 acres?
Once you add in everything, no, it came actually down closer to 130,000, which was, again, much.
No, I mean, but what the trade was thinking was, yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right.
So far more than the actual, or quote, what appears to be the actual number. Again, so we just have large numbers that are coming in potentially for yield. The acreage may change. Harvested acres is going to be an interesting question, Matt, to have to deal with. Yet farmers are behind on their marketing. They're behind on their old crop marketing, maybe still. It appears that is the case. And they are also behind on their new crop marketing. What are we telling them?
Yeah, I mean, clearly the producer held on to quite a bit of corn. You know, you looked at that quarterly stocks number at the end of June, and, you know, you're looking at $3 billion on the farm, $5 billion overall-ish numbers. That's pretty close, though. You know, and obviously that corn had to find a way to town, so to speak. We know there's going to be some corn that's carried in. But overall, the problem with carrying this for so long this year, of course, is that, you know, you're going to come into a time period when the processor pretty much knows that a new crop is just right around the corner. And so what are you telling those producers? Yeah, I guess the easiest thing to tell a producer is we need to move away from this old crop. I know it's not going to be a pleasant thing to think about. If we look at those 2023 bushels as a standalone and we're selling them at the price today, versus the input cost for that 23 crop, there's no question that those particular bushels are going to be underwater. But we have to remember that, you know, we probably had better sales earlier in the year, especially stuff that we had hedged going into the fall of 23. So the best thing to do is go ahead and get those bushels marketed, move on. You can participate in some of this 24 crop as well. Now, if we haven't sold hardly any 24 crop, you know, the unfortunate reality is that the market today, given the fact that the 24 crop was in most cases even more expensive to put in the ground than the 23 crop, you know, it's just a pretty tough conversation. And so, you know, we've been telling our growers not to assume, you know, just because prices are bad down here that they can't get any worse, because we feel like they could still move a fair amount lower, at least have a floor under prices, have a flexible strategy in place, you know, at least on those bushels that you need cash for this fall. You know, and by all means, I'd like to protect as many of the bushels as possible. That doesn't mean we're locking ourselves into a long-term price, given the fact that we can re-own some bushels later on, and we can, you know, utilize the carry in the market with some of the bushels on the farm. But by all means, for what you need money for this fall, don't make any big assumptions that we can't move lower yet.
And Naomi, how are you asking producers to think about hedging their new crop or other things? And I'm not suggesting they should, but asking what your thoughts are.
Similar. Also, you know, reminding folks, what's the cost of storage? What does interest rates cost adding into that? What is that like? And then having the conversation of, you know, store and ignore isn't necessarily the best thing to do. And now that the D24 corn today closed below $4. Technically, things are looking a little weaker. The D25 corn now below $4.50 looks like things might just continue to edge lower. You know, and ultimately, at some point, you know, we know that low prices will cure low prices, and eventually more demand picks up. One thing, which people maybe not don't want to hear, but I'll say it, is that other countries right now are going back to the just-in-time freight mentality, where they're going to just, you know, we're not going to necessarily stockpile. We're going to rely on the Americans to deliver grain to us when we need it, because they have great storage. The farmers have great storage at home. We've got a great elevator system. We've got great railroads. We have a river system that we have, a, you know, full rivers again. So my fear is, unless we see some major geopolitical action occur, we might see end users just be a little bit complacent. And if prices sink lower, yeah, they'll buy in bulk because it's on sale. But I don't know that they're going to buy in bulk to the point where they're going to want to have it hoarded and all at their home country. They may just let the American farmers store it. So that could be something that could just continue to kind of weigh on prices and keep prices, generally speaking, in a little bit of a lower trough, unless something happens again geopolitically.
Arlen, when you're considering the global stocks, what jumps out at you, if anything, on corn, soybeans, or wheat as it's related to the U.S., and how much is on hand here and what that does to the marketplace?
Yeah, we're currently amply supplied on the world market. Are there some potential factors that could come to play? There definitely are. When we look at the corn market, Ukraine's going to see more losses because of the heat and dryness. Russia's corn crop isn't a big one relative to other exporters, but they'll see some losses. And so the Black Sea corn crop's going to be smaller, maybe even about 6-7 million metric tons. Then you look at the upcoming growing season for Argentina. I've been told by two different sources down in Argentina that they'll be down on their corn acreage this next year by 25-30%. Now, when I hear a number like that, I normally am a little bit skeptical, but these two sources don't know each other and they came to the same number. And so that did perk up my ears. And it's largely because of not just the economics, but because of this new disease spread by the leafhopper that they had this last year. Now that's going to soybeans. So that's bearish soybeans, but friendly to the corn market longer term. That would be more of a factor for as we get into the third and fourth quarter of the next marketing year, where we may benefit from that. And then you say, does La Nina have an impact? Keep in mind that Brazil will be planting soybeans earlier this year, assuming they have moisture. They've changed their policies down there to allow earlier planting. That removes a lot of the risk of a late soybean harvest and therefore a late planting of their winter corn crop. So that's one of the bearish factors. On wheat, there's another, you know, I think we're seeing some significant reductions in European wheat production estimates that USDA hasn't accounted for yet. We already know that we have a smaller Russian crop and Ukrainian crop. That's probably more of a factor for the last half of the marketing year. So basically, it looks like we're going to factor a lot of bearishness in over the next 4 or 5 months. Then as we get into next year, maybe into next late winter, into the spring, into summer, then we can start seeing some of these factors come around if we haven't seen weather produce, you know, larger crops in the meantime to kind of make up for those losses.
I want to come back to the next 4 or 5 months of bearish marketplace and see if Matt and Naomi are of that same ilk. But I do want to get a couple of clarifications from you. For the planting date moved up about 2 weeks from what, September 15 to September 1 for parts of Brazil. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then for Argentina and Brazil combined, the numbers that we get from Brazil each month, along not with USDA, but from Brazil's counterpart to USDA, oftentimes will show, well, and USDA as well, will show that Brazil's corn exports are down, but that was because Brazil was exporting so much to Argentina to fill their need, correct?
That's one of the factors.
Year over year.
Yeah, and the farmer's been very slow to sell as well, which means he still has the bushels looking for opportunities. And they don't just look for rallies on the board. They look for a combination of that creates a flat price. So that includes what's happening on the board as well as what's happening in the currency. And the currency's been very volatile this year. And so there have been surges of selling at times we didn't anticipate it because of changes in currency.
Naomi, are you of a mind that we're in a 4 to 6 months still trending, I don't know whether lower or sideways to lower?
I think 2 months for sure till we get into a harvest low situation, but then it's going to take another month after that to grind out of it. So getting closer towards Thanksgiving, I think prices can start to work higher. And then into December, having some weather issues potentially happening in South America. Of course, we have to get through our elections here, keeping an eye on the value of our U.S. dollar also in terms of interest rates. So I'm negative pretty much into October. And then there's a lot of outside market influences that can start to come into play. But between now and end of October, yeah, I would stay defensive.
How does that impact the way you think about new crop corn that has to go into storage at the grain elevator?
Well, for producers who are looking to, you know, put grain into storage, I mean, I would lean more towards pricing it out. If the prices are going to continue to fall, then let it fall. And then at some point, there'll be a great re-ownership opportunity potentially. But again, we are in a situation where we have the perception of plentiful supplies here in the United States. And at the moment, plentiful supplies of corn and soybeans, for the most part, around the world. So that can keep prices lower. And so usually people are like, you know, Naomi will give us some friendly news. And I just don't have it for you guys right now. I don't have that soundbite to make everybody happy because the supplies are big and that is going to weigh on prices for the short term here.
And then Matt Bennett, on the flip side, that grain, the corn that farmers can store on the farm, should they go ahead and hedge that in some way at this point? And how do they think about capturing the carry in the marketplace? And can you tell me a little bit about what the carry looks like?
Well, the thing is that the carry right now to get out to July, you know, you run around 37 cents. And so 37 cents sounds like a lot compared to a lot of years that we've seen recently. It's nowhere near full carry as far as the board is concerned. And the other thing you have to remember, of course, is interest costs. So, yeah, if a producer is going to put corn in the bin, I think there's a variety of things that they can try to do. Personally, I think that I'd be hesitant is to assume that we're going to get a huge payoff here. You were asking the previous two how long you think things might be bearish. Personally, I think that you get into that September report, you know, and you find out just how big the USDA thinks this crop is after being in the field. And the fear of how big that number is going to be is most likely going to cause more frustration in the market than the actual number will. We've witnessed that in the past. So I do think at some point in there, you can kind of get some sort of a bounce. It might be tough to do if people are harvesting 250 to 275 bushel corn, you know, in the I states, for instance. But I guess my thought is maybe it won't last 4 or 5 months. I don't think we're going to get out of control as far as a rally to the upside. I think things could get pretty rough before we rally. But, you know, as far as those bushels, I would do some hedging, Todd, to answer the question. I'm concerned that it could get pretty rough sledding. So I want to add one more thing, you know, what might precipitate some thoughts that better days are coming. And I guess the way I'm looking at it right now, Todd, I don't think it's too early to talk about the fact that fertilizer is entirely too high for the 25 crop. Whenever you look at these 25 corn being in this 444 range, which is where we settled as of Thursday, to me, if fertilizer stays there and the price of corn or that ratio stays halfway close to what it is right now, I really struggle to think that the grower, first of all, is going to apply anywhere near the dry fertilizer tonnage that we have in the last few years. And second of all, I think that it'll have acreage implications come next spring. And that could be a discussion that could maybe precipitate some enthusiasm in the market on down the road.
Arlen, can you put Josh on? No. I know he sits next to you, so you've probably been talking to him. What's he saying about fertilizer?
The fertilizer market's a little bit like pork bellies used to be when we traded them and trying to anticipate that. Because there's so many international things at stake now that could change. And I think the big thing we're watching right now is India and what do they do? And that is a huge wild card right now, which may end up impacting our markets, whether we can pull these prices lower or see prices hold up at these levels. And so that's a big unknown for us right now.
We'll try to get hold of Josh Linville from Sonax to talk about fertilizer prices maybe in the next week and a half or 2 weeks. I do want to hear, Arlen, from you as well about hedging new crop and what you're considering.
Well, when you look at new crop, I think it's been well stated already. The question is going to be hitting singles and doubles in our marketing. This is that phase of the agricultural cycle where we go into defensive mode, as Naomi said as well, where we've had it easy on marketing for a few years and we built some equity. Now we want to protect it. So we look at the carry. Do we have opportunities to build carry in there? That's not just for the board, but also for the basis as well. Ever diligent in shopping around those basis opportunities. I think that we're going to have some pockets that see lower production this year, which if you're close enough to them, will pay the freight to move grain into those areas, particularly some of the flood-prone areas, as well as the feedlot areas in the Western Plains. Now, that doesn't help Illinois too much because I don't think we'll be as so tight as to pull the grain that far from Illinois. That has happened before. I don't know that we're going to be that way this year. That's going to be a significant factor, is just shop around, be diligent, and be willing to accept smaller wins, so to speak, if they help you protect the equity you've built in your farm in recent years.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I'm going to direct yours just a little bit, Arlen, because I didn't get around to asking about the outside markets and interactions. Can you give us that as we say goodbye?
Yeah. The real key is here, the route that we saw on Wall Street really started with the Bank of Japan's move that caused an unwinding of the yen carry trades, and we're just at the beginning of that. So they're going to be buying far fewer of our treasury debt certificates going forward if, in fact, their monetary policy continues to move the direction that it is. And I think that puts upward pressure, as we've already seen this week with a very weak auction for 10-year treasuries, upward pressure on interest rates. So as you're looking at managing your interest rate risk, that's something to be paying attention to. We've had a break here. Those mid and longer term interest rates do have some upside risk that you need to be paying attention to.
And Naomi, your final word?
I think, of course, with the mindset of being defensive with grain prices and grain marketing, that's really important. But really keep an eye on all of the geopolitical things happening, and especially heading into our elections. You know, one little spark could just ignite the entire grain market facility, you know, just depending on what could be happening in the world. So while we have a defensive mindset, always keep one eye looking to see, you know, what is really happening around the world, and be ready to release that negative mentality for prices if one of those outside market indicators all of a sudden just sends things in a different direction. So stay defensive, but not so that you're so blindly defensive that in case something friendly happens, you can be quick to respond to it as well.
And Matt?
Yeah, I think these markets certainly have the tendency to cause most of us to be frustrated in the farming world. One great thing we've got going for us, of course, in a lot of cases, is that we have pretty darn good yields on the way, most of us. I think that as we move through this fall and we start to think about how you know, our marketing plan might come together, what we don't already have spoken for, you know, we just got to keep ourselves, keep things in perspective, because yes, we may not make a red penny here in 24. It might not be one of those years where we're able to add to the balance sheet. As these guys said, we're going to be in defensive mode. I think that what you've got to do is you've got to try to minimize the damage in some cases, and then keep yourself very flexible for any sort of a rally in the markets. You know, and to put yourself in a position where you don't get strangled by an upward move where you're frustrated that the market moves higher. I know a lot of people are uber bearish right now. I'm not super friendly myself, but I'm also trying to stay out of the way of the freight train and doing so in a manner that's not going to kill me, you know, if this market turns out around and goes to the upside. So you've got to keep your flexibility and keep your wits about you.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may hear the whole of the program and listen to it anytime you'd like on demand online at WILLAG.org or in your favorite podcast applications. Just search out Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing, and Arlen Suderman of StoneX.